Coming up on this episode of the Radio Today programme, Trevor Dan returns with another industry roundtable discussion. He'll be joined by Chris Stevens, Stuart Morgan and Phil Maguire in Salford. Plus more from James Cridland on polishing your live radio act. And David Lloyd takes us to the BBC's Radiophonic Workshop, celebrates 25 years of CFM and 34 years of Viking.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First though, some big news from Bauer Media this week. Changes coming to Key 103 in Manchester. Here's how they announced the news to listeners on Wednesday morning.
Key 103 is upgrading.
Yeah, we're about to become the country's first national commercial radio station ever to come from Manchester.
Now, because of this, our name is changing as well. We are going to start broadcasting across the UK on DAB digital radio, as well as, of course, on 103 FM in Manchester. And Key 103 is now going to be known as Hits Radio. Okay, that is going to be the new name for Key 103. Now, before you get all excited, I'm not leaving. I'm going to be doing the show after this. I'm going to be doing a solo show after the breakfast show, Monday to Friday, from 10 until 1 p.m.
And I'm going to be producing the brand new breakfast show, which is going to be presented by Gethin Jones, Dave Vitti, and some girl who we're pretty familiar with. Her name's Gemma Atkinson.
That's Mike and Matt on Key 103 Breakfast. Well, Graham Bryce is with us on the podcast this week, Managing Director for the Big City Network, soon to be the Hits Radio Network. Graham, thank you for coming on the Radio Today programme.
Thanks for having me.
So a new strategy for what we've known as Big City Network One. Tell us what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, well, I think, as many people know, the Bauer City Network is Bauer's largest radio network. We reach about 7 million listeners every week, and it's the third largest in the UK behind Capital and Heart. But what many people probably haven't realised within that is that we actually only broadcast to 45% of the UK population. So our stations actually only cover less than half of the potential audience across the whole of the UK. So as kind of digital listening was increasing, and we're now almost 50%, and as the future looks more and more digital, and all of our competitors and other brands are increasingly, you know, now distributed across the whole of the UK, it sort of became inconceivable to us that Bauer City could grow its audience long term without extending its distribution. So we wanted to find a way of us reaching the whole of the UK in terms of the potential audience out there. And the simplest way for that, for us to do that, was to launch a national station that is reflective of BC One. It's aimed at the kind of 25 to 44 year old thriving families that we target in BC One. Similar music policy, but on a national scale, at a national level, and that's the reason why we've done it.
And that's fairly straightforward to do, but you're incorporating Key 103 into that strategy as well and changing its name. So why the decision to do it with Key in particular out of all the stations in the network?
Yeah, well, first of all, we had to decide where to launch this thing from. So we could have launched it from London, of course, but we felt that one of the unique things about Bauer City is the fact that it is regional-based and it has reflect the kind of diversity of the UK population. And sometimes some London-based media tend to be a little bit London-centric. So we thought, wouldn't it be interesting and provide an alternative to do this thing outside of London? So we decided to base it out of Manchester because we think that by itself will create a different sounding radio station, because it's going to be based out of a different city and it's going to have a different ethos. It's going to have a diverse range of voices on it that may be more reflective of the wider UK population. And then as soon as we decided to launch it from Manchester, it became pretty obvious to us that we could kind of have the best of both worlds. So this station, you know, a lot of local radio, as we know in Key 103 and all of our other stations, the key thing with them, as far as, you know, the connection with the audience, this kind of emotional connection that our audience feels as though it's their radio station. It's kind of part of the fabric of who they are and the cities in which they live in. And I think when you base a station out of somewhere like Manchester, I think people of Manchester will feel the same about Hits Radio. They'll feel as though it's their radio station. They're going to be proud of the fact that this radio station is based in their great city, that's broadcasting across the whole of the UK from Manchester. So that emotional connection with Hits Radio, I think, will remain. And they'll become as proud of it as they have been with Key 103. So that's why we brought those two things together, to retain that kind of emotional connection in Manchester, but then to create something of scale that's across the UK, that's much bigger, that's got more investment, that's got, you know, more opportunity. And I think the combination of those things is a pretty compelling story.
most of your other BC One stations take their network programmes from Key 103 at the moment, so that'll continue, will it, in terms of the daytime shows that are networked out across the rest of the stations?
Yeah, I mean, as I've said, Hicks Radio will be the flagship station for the network, so it will be the network hub as it is now. So we create network content out of Manchester under the old way of working, and we'll continue to do so under Hicks Radio Network.
So in those other markets, so in Sheffield or Leeds or Newcastle or wherever, there's going to be a Hicks Radio product that people can get, and also their Heritage Name product, which is essentially the same thing, just with different presenters at certain times of the day. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to sound and feel quite different, because the sound of Hicks Radio is going to be quite different to what we do at BC One. And the other thing to add into this is that we've obviously done quite a lot of research around this, and mm-hmm. what our research is telling us that in all of our markets in which we have these heritage stations, around half the population love and want local commercial radio. So they listen to our radio stations, they love what we do, they're very connected to us, and they want that to continue. But around half the people in those markets actually want national radio, whether that be the BBC or national brands or other content that's a bit more wide than maybe just what the local stations are offering. So in this strategy, we are now able to talk to both sides of the market in every single market which we operate. So there's sort of two things here in terms of growing audience. One is the 55% of the UK audience that we're not currently reaching, so there's a whole new opportunity there for grabbing new listeners. And even with our home markets, there's going to be an element of people there who have rejected our local stations because they don't want local radio and may want a bigger national brand and a bigger national offering, and they may want to tune into us on that basis. So I think we've got an opportunity on both sides to grow audience.
And I know you've been very keen to say that it is only Key 103 that's getting this rebrand and the other heritage brands are here to stay. I know that's been your position over the last few years when we've had you on this podcast before. You were quite clear about that the heritage names yep. mean something in a lot of those markets. So can you kind of guarantee us that those names won't disappear and all the stations will become Hicks Radio Leeds, Hicks Radio Newcastle, Hicks Radio Glasgow?
Well, there's sort of two things we wanted to do with this, station. One was get that national distribution, as we've talked about. The second thing was to simplify the trade proposition. And a lot of the naming around stations is done for two reasons. One, it's consumer-led, or one, it's trade-led. Yep. From the trade point of view, we have now, I think, much simplified what the Borough City Network stands for. So if you're in London and you're at an agency, you can now listen, post-June 4, you can listen to Hicks Radio, you can understand what that station stands for, you can know you can get it across the UK or something very similar to that across the UK, and you can buy it. So it becomes a much, much simpler proposition from a trade point of view. So that's going to solve the trade issue with it. So there's no reason from a trade point of view to rebrand any of our local stations. And in fact, we're going to be listener-led when it comes to our local radio stations. So if our listeners continue to love our radio stations, continue to want to tune in, why would we change those brands? It'd be crazy. If you live in Glasgow or you live in Liverpool or any of our other cities, I think that they love those radio stations, they love those heritage brands, and there's no real rationale for us to change that strategy. Now, is that going to be the case in 10 or 20 years? I don't know, but certainly for the foreseeable future, I think that's absolutely where we're going to be.
Yeah, a wise thing to never say never, I guess. Where does this leave Big City Network 2? So we've got in Manchester Key 2 at the moment. When Key 103 doesn't exist, Key 3 already doesn't exist because that disappeared last year and turned into the Hicks again. Does Key 2 work on its own still, or will that be changing its name?
No, in the short term, it's going to stay as it is. I think obviously we'll drop the 2 because that doesn't make much sense when you don't have a 1.
Yeah.
So it'll be called Key Radio.
Well, there wasn't a 1 before in Manchester, to be fair.
Well, there wasn't a 1 before, to be fair. Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's not going to change its brand in the short term, no.
Okay. In terms of the Hicks, you've had that as a standalone digital offer for a few years now. I know it became Big City 3 and then went back to the Hicks again on those multiplexes in the north last summer. That disappears, and that was targeted at a younger demographic than BC One, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a sort of 15-24 CHR format, as you know. And it did really well at the start, and nothing against the guys who worked there. They've brought through an amazing set of talent into BC One and beyond, into the whole of the radio industry. And I think in some ways they've pioneered a lot of the the new ways of working across our whole network. So it's been a hugely interesting and great journey for the Hits as a brand. But at the end of the day, it just doesn't have the scale on its own in this kind of complicated, competitive world in which we live in to sort of be there as a standalone business. So the Hits is going to cease to broadcast, and then we're going to launch this new thing called Hits Radio, which is, you know, from a product point of view, a completely different proposition. It may be close in terms of name, but it's actually going to be a completely different product.
We know how you sell it to the advertising agencies, and we know in the industry how it works because we've seen other radio companies do this with their brands. But how do you sell it to audiences? I know, looking at your social media feeds for Key 103 today already, your social team have been kind of batting away all the negative stuff and say, hey, give us a go when we start. You'll love it. But is it a difficult thing to do for you to take away that name, and people are going to have the perception that this is going to be a completely different radio station, when perhaps in the industry we know nothing really much might change other than the name and a few presenters? Is that a difficult sell for your local teams with the audience?
I genuinely don't think so. I mean, obviously there'll be some people who love Key 103 name and they've grew up with it and are very emotionally attached to it, but at the end of the day, the product that they're going to listen to has all the elements of Q103 that they loved before. So got a lot of the same presenters, obviously Jim Atkinson still on there, Mike Toulin still on there, Debbie Max on there, and lots of others. It's going to have local news, it's going to have local traffic and travel, it's going to have that local campaigning journalism, it's going to have local information. We're going to do, you know, we can get behind local events as we always have done. So it's going to have all those local elements, but yet it's going to have a sort of sense of scale and ambition and size and personalities and interviews that are going to be at a national level, and we want this station truly to compete at a national level and feel like it's a big sounding national radio station. And I think the listeners of Manchester, I genuinely think they're going to be really proud of the fact that there's this big radio station that is born and bred from their city that's now expanding across the whole of the UK. And I think it reflects the modern Manchester. Manchester's gone through a huge change, as you know, over the last 5 or 10 years. And there's lots of talk about the Northern Powers, lots of talk about, you know, a sort of second city from a media point of view. And this just adds to that kind of feeling that Manchester's growing up, it's sort of coming of age, it's now a second base for media. And this station should be something that people of Manchester should be really proud of. And I think they will get emotionally attached to this as much as they have been emotionally attached to what has gone before.
From your press release from this week, it would appear the suggestion was that this national station is going to replace the Hits on the Bauer-owned digital multiplexes that you've got in certain parts of the country. But you want to get this in London, you want to get this in the Midlands, in the south of England and other places to hit that reach of being a national station. So presumably it's in your strategy to make it national properly on digital radio.
Yeah, we haven't announced the distribution strategy, and you know, there'll be a moment when we do announce it. But so suffice it to say that this will have, you know, national coverage if you on DAB, that is, if you count national coverage as being a minimum of the kind of D2 level 80% of the UK population. So this will be a UK-wide national DAB service.
We'll look forward to you telling us a bit more about that in the weeks to come. And obviously, Gary has had a couple of years away from Bauer at Global with Heart. Has he brought anything back to the table that's kind of spurred you on to want to do this, having kind of done that national brands delivered locally with Global? Or is this a kind of, it's a Bauer thing and it's nothing to do with Gary coming back and telling us all their secrets?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a Bauer thing. I mean, we've been thinking about this for quite a while, as you'd expect. And we've got a fair knowledge ourselves and experience of national radio with our other stable of brands, with Kiss, Magic and Absolute, as you know. So, but of course, it's great to have Gary back in the family. He is one of the most experienced radio programmers in the UK, as you know. So having his kind of experience and knowledge and insight and expertise on this is a fantastic asset to us. But you know, this is a Bauer strategy.
Well, good luck with it. Also, it's 4th of June it launches, and we wish you well.
Thanks very much, Stuart.
Thank you, Graham. Next, we're heading to Salford for this month's roundtable with Trevor, Dan and guests.
Visual radio, smarter and cheaper. Virtual director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Welcome to the March edition of our monthly roundtable. Well, it should have been, but then the beast from the east intervened. So here we are. It's the April edition of the Radio Today Roundtable, and we're reconvened in Salford at the glamorous studio complex of Audio Always. We'll be talking about working in national radio while based in the Northwest, and lots of other things too. Let's first of all find out who is constituting the panel. First of all, our host.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
My name's Stuart Morgan. I'm an Audio Always here in Salford, and you're all very welcome.
I'm Phil Maguire, and I have the honour of being Chief Executive of the Prison Radio Association.
And you're based up here?
I personally am based in South Manchester, yes.
My name's Chris Stevens. I run Ignite Jingles and Diva Web, and also I programme Chris Country, the DAB radio station, which all comes from a building here at Media City.
Now, most people listening to this, I would warrant, are not familiar with the whole business of Media City and Manchester. And you all know that when you spend any time in London, people do talk about it as up there, and they're a bit sneery about it, let's be honest. So let's start just by talking about what the reality is of working with particularly network stations and, you know, big commercial stations as well when based here, Stu.
I find it fascinating, the impression that people have of Media City UK who aren't here. I mean, we're sitting here today in the middle of a very vibrant, buzzing media community, creative community. Lots of people, lots of ideas, lots of things going on. For us, it doesn't make too much difference, I don't think. Well, I certainly, I know, Chris, you're literally based at, you know, 2 minutes walk away from here at Media City, but it doesn't feel like we're in anything different other than a great creative community.
People say that the corridor culture of the BBC, but also to an extent of global, means that those people who are based in the south are kind of bumping into people who are going to give them work, and they're able to say, oh, I've had an idea, and you can do that pitching to somebody in the lift, all that stuff. Whereas you guys are just that little bit further away. Do you feel that at all?
We started here 6 years ago, and we were literally here when it was a building site. And yes, I think if we rewind 6 years, we were still having to go to London for a lot of the meetings. It did feel like we were one step removed. Now you can walk into Costa and bump into people. Yes, you know what? It'll never be, you know, walking round the corner from Broadcasting House and bumping into somebody. But I don't think it's never meant it, that's not what this is about. I think there are lots of BBC people who are working from here who come and visit. We will often have now meetings with commissioners here at Media City. And the same goes for the commercial brands we work with and the commercial stations.
Plus, you only have to get off the tram at Media City, which is a very quick journey from Piccadilly. And in front of you, you've got BBC Key House, where you've got Breakfast and Five Live and Radio Manchester. You've got, you look a little bit to the right, you've got where the orchestra is and where you've got a whole load of Radio 4 output. Look a little bit behind you, ITV are there, the University of Salford are here. Just across the water, you've got the new Coronation Street setting. Plus then, as you sort of head around and discover further, a whole range of independent production companies, such as Audio Always with Stuart, ourselves, Seven Digital across the way. And then, you know, that's even before you start getting into the companies doing online content or digital content. It's a really focused area and a really diverse mix of people and mix of creative output that's being produced here on a daily basis that actually, as Stu said, it is different to London. You know, London has been the media home for a long time, but as a focused location that's all within a very short walk, there's a lot of stuff here, and it's growing, and it's exciting. You know, the Peel, who own the area and do all the building, they're always creating new locations for companies to come and work from. It feels like there's a real big snowball of activity happening, and that makes me really excited.
I think the main advantage that this area has over London is that it's not in London. I spent 10 years working in London. I enjoyed myself. It's big, it's noisy, it's busy, it's smelly. And I moved my family to live in the very proud cultural hub known as Manchester. And I love being here. And when I first came to Media City, full of hope, with my eyes open several years ago, I was deeply disappointed because it felt like a brand new ghost town, if such a thing is possible.
Yeah, it was soulless.
It was soulless, and it's not now. It is buzzing. It's full of people that are creative, that are working hard, that are working together, and it's a real pleasure to come here. I don't work in Media City on a regular basis, but I really enjoy coming here when I have got business here, and it's got a Wagamama's, so my kids love it.
And a Pret now. We don't have to queue for... There were limited places to get a sandwich, and now we're... almost spoilt for choice.
Well, yes. If people came up here for the radio festival when it used to be held in the Lowry across the way, sort of 5-6 years ago, there was just Lime Bar. And that was the only place to go. And I would invite people to come back because there's now so much more, including the aforementioned wonderful Wagamama. So
now, here's the thing that I wanted to talk to you about. The business of what you are here to do. Are you here to serve national radio? Or are you here to reflect the Northwest? And I ask this question because of something that Gwyneth Williams, the controller of Radio 4, said at a conference not long ago. Well, in fact, I asked her the question about, you know, don't you think you should throw a bit more money at production companies outside of London? And her reply was all about, well, honestly, you know, we really do like the programmes you make that reflect your communities. Of course, this is red rag to a bull to some companies based up here. You say, wait a minute, we can make programmes that are about the world, that are as good as anything that is made about London or Britain or the rest of the world. So I'm just wondering how you guys approach that.
Well, from our production side of things, Steve Webb at Ignite, we're making content and imaging and jingles for radio stations across the world. And I don't think the fact we're in Manchester has that much relevance to that. And from the Chris Country side of things, we're on DAB in seven parts of the country, of which London is our most important commercial market. And that means that we have a lot of involvement with London, but we can still do it from Manchester.
It's an interesting one for me because I think that we can't on one hand be sitting here going, you know, we've got a wonderful creative community, and then be going, please give us a special advantage because we're outside of London. You know what? We need to be going to BBC networks as Northern production companies, as Scottish production companies, wherever the production company is, inside of London, outside of London, with the best ideas, the best talent, and we should be treated equally in that because, as you say, Trevor, it doesn't really matter where we are. But I do think that Gwyneth has a point because we, as Manchester-based production companies, are better connected to the communities around us than probably people elsewhere. So I think we need to find a bit of a fine balance, actually, of going, you know, we need to find those stories that you might not discover if you're a London-based production company here in Manchester. But I certainly don't think that we should be pigeonholed into only making programmes about certain areas because of where we're based.
So I'm based in Manchester. I've got colleagues based in London, in Sussex, in Buckinghamshire, all over the place. And we make programmes for a range of people, for the BBC networks, for World Service. We've made programmes recently in Africa. So I don't think it really makes a difference where we are in terms of we go where the business is. We come up with ideas and that's what's the important bit. And we try and sell them to whoever's going to buy them. And we work with people we want to work with. But the fact that we are here, we made a programme that went out, a podcast that was launched yesterday, and there's a really great interview in there with a male sex worker based in Manchester. And that was because I've got staff in Manchester and because we have connections in Manchester. So it's the idea that Five Live came here and Five Live started to sound more representative of people outside London. The fact that I have staff based up here means that our content is more representative of people outside London, and that can only be a good thing.
As listeners, are we hearing a different voice on Five Live than we perhaps do on Radio 4, for instance?
I think probably yes.
I think certainly yes. You know, I think it has made a huge difference in terms of the voices on Five Live, but also talent. You know, there are so many people who are quite happily based in the north who don't want to move to London, who don't see their media careers, you know, getting the tube to Soho every day for that, who are doing great work on great national radio stations. I kind of feel like the conversation needs to move on from regions and London, because if we are sitting here and want to be treated as equal to these networks, then we need to be almost, it doesn't matter where we are. It just so happens that we're based here, but we could be based anywhere. And I fear that the more conversations we have around inside London, outside London, where we might be, we're almost creating a rod for our own back. We should just be coming to whoever is commissioning programmes with the best ideas, the best talent, no matter where we're based, really.
We're in Salford. It's the Radio Today Roundtable. Trevor Dan, Chris Stevens, Stuart Morgan and Phil Maguire. We are around the table, audio always. Let me refer you to James Cridland's recent blog, which I thought was really interesting. The idea about live radio and whether it has a place. He was arguing briefly that some live radio isn't very good and that actually it would be better if you just did it again and got it right. Phil?
I've heard James talk about this for a number of years, and I think he's spot on. I think there is a real beauty and a real magic to live radio, and there are programmes that I listen to on Radio 4 that if they weren't live, they just wouldn't be the same. But there's a lot of radio that's produced.
Give me an example of one of those.
With the Today programme is the best example.
I was going to say PM.
PM, yeah, absolutely PM. And there's a whole load of programmes that are...
But if Woman's Hour was pre-recorded, it would just simply be tighter, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or front row.
I think some
of
the interviews.
The
I don't know. Some of the interviews they do on Woman's Hour, the magic is because they're done live. So there's an argument on both sides. But when I'm executing a programme, my team will tell you I'm a great one for saying, look, there's 3 minutes in there of just stuff that can be sharpened. There's no need for it to be there. And we work, okay, we run a production company and we make programmes for a range of broadcasters, but we also run a radio station that broadcasts to 80-odd thousand prisoners. And most of our programmes are presented by prisoners. They're not professional broadcasters. If we take a programme that's been recorded in a studio and just spend an extra 10 minutes sharpening it, it can sound a hell of a lot better when you deum it, when you take out all of those stumbles and those ums and those erms. I just think there's a real argument for doing it.
That's the documentary maker in you, kind of that. And you know, I'm a total perfectionist, but there is something so magic and special about the unpredictability of live that I just think when we're making programmes, yes, we will tidy it up. But I think actually those stumbles and that kind of unpredictability it's so special for me personally. And
it'd be good if we had somebody here run an entire radio station that wasn't live.
Oh, here's one.
Oh, hello. Yeah, well, indeed. Chris Country is entirely Memorex, I guess you could say, to use an old school reference. And I would say 99.5% of the time, that's fine. And we are often almost live. So, you know, we do a lot of voice tracking. We'll do that just before our show goes out. Our news service comes in via Dropbox and is almost live, but not quite. That has given us an ability to run a station on a far lower cost base than it would be to have traditional studios and broadcasters in there. There is the odd time. It would be nice to put the headphones on and push the fader up. You know, if we've got a brand new song from a big artist and we want to immediately get reaction and reflect that on air, or we're at a major event, major country event, such as the one at the O2 recently, that would be nice. But the vast majority of the time, it doesn't matter. And it's like you were saying about Woman's Hour as an example. I don't feel any... I'm a big Archers fan. I don't feel hard done by because The Archers isn't live. I'm quite happy that they record it and make it great, and that works fine for me. I think I would rephrase James's point as just because we've done something a certain way for a long time doesn't mean that's the rule that should always stick and should apply to everything.
What did you make of the Australian radio station that pre-recorded its travel bulletin?
Well, that's just cheating and wrong and immoral. And I think the article that I've got here, I think the implication is that they've just put it out because it's easy to do so, and there is advertising money attached to the bulletin.
Yeah.
So if they're just doing it for the money, that's disgusting. And if it makes you get stuck in a traffic jam, or not get stuck in one when you thought you were going to, it's terrible. It's awful.
Oh, there's traffic jam lovers.
So what do we think about the correct clothing for a live presenter? I ask this because two presenters on BBC Radio Sheffield have decided to do their latest work in the buff. What do we make of that?
When I first saw it, I thought, well, that's dangerous, isn't it? In this modern age of, you know, we all know what we're talking about. I think my initial reaction was it's dangerous. And then my second point was, it's just a story to get a few headlines. And then I've actually read about it. I've not listened to any of the content yet, but I've read about it. And it sounds like a really fantastic initiative. Two of the presenters recorded not at Radio Sheffield, but at one of the presenters' homes, did a series of interviews. All of the interviewees and the presenters were naked. And they apparently got some astonishing stories. One of the presenters said, "I can't wait for people to hear the astonishing stories we've recorded with brave, funny and brutally honest women." And if that's true, if the stories are astonishing, then fantastic. Mm. If that very unusual device of saying, come in, take your clothes off, let's do an interview, if the result of that was that there was a bit of electricity in the room, a bit of tension that wouldn't normally be there, and it means they get access to people who want to tell a story, the woman who had a double mastectomy, for example, if they get to the root of some powerful stories and they're told incredibly well, then fantastic and good for them.
I think there's something quite liberating in it. I'm sure if we all took our clothes off now, it would feel very different in this room.
Not going to happen.
But the dream situation for anybody that you're interviewing is that they feel relaxed and they feel comfortable. And actually, if you can be in a position as a broadcaster sitting opposite somebody with no clothes on and have a warm, natural conversation, I think that's something quite special.
There's a bit of an ooh moment. I'm going to read you another bit from this article. In the first podcast recorded at Jenny's house, they see each other naked for the first time and discuss their different views about nudity. And then one of them says, I can't believe I'm sitting on your sofa naked on a towel.
what? Oh, okay. Let's not go there. Shall we talk about United DJs? Has anybody heard this brand new online station? Chris, you're the sort of guy who'd probably check this out.
Why is that?
Because it's got jingles on it.
Well, we do know there are never enough jingles in the world. That is certainly true. I think this whole area of kind of specialist or niche online broadcasting is really interesting, because that's how Chris Country started off, as an online radio station that was for a very specific audience. And that was 5 years ago, and it's kind of grown from there. And I think, you know, there probably is a market for recreating some of the feel of BBC network radio as it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. I also think it's a fairly small audience. And the difficulty, I think there's two difficulties. The first is technology. Listening online is still not as easy as listening to terrestrial radio by some way. And the other is just keeping the enthusiasm going, because audience figures were really hard to sustain. And you have to accept that you're broadcasting to a small number of people. And the trouble with online is you can see exactly how many there are, which if you're presuming it's going to be thousands, and you know, you used to do the Radio 1 Roadshow and would see 20,000 people turning up in a reel to see you, times have changed.
I don't know whether you heard Kid Jensen said to me on this podcast a few weeks ago, he said, we're always trained, aren't we, that we're broadcasting to an audience of one. He said, I have been on stations which have an audience of one.
And it's tough. It's tough to keep continuity of the quality across a schedule like that, not only of the content, but also of the different studios being used, the levels, all this kind of stuff, that listeners these days have so much choice. They don't tolerate poor quality. And I'm not suggesting this station is poor quality. I think it's a general point. It's really tough. It's a lot of work. And I wish them well.
Have any of us actually heard it?
I heard the launch.
OK, so Cryogenic FM. Off you go, Phil.
So Mike Reed comes along and he says, 8 former Radio 1 DJs, 8 former Capital DJs, 12 former Radio Luxembourg Stumbles DJs, and Eddie Grant. And all our chums over in Canada as well. For a launch of a station, it's a shame that they didn't take James Cridland's advice and pre-record it and sharpen it, because there's a few stumbles in there and it's not beautifully written. He goes on to state in the launch, in 1919, Charlie Chaplin, Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford formed United Artists to give them creative control over their films. United DJs have done the same thing to take back creative control over the music. I think that's a bit waffly for the launch of a station.
Just a little bit, yeah. And is it true? Stu?
I think I haven't heard it. It doesn't appeal to me.
You can guess exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, I can. And I think Chris's point around niche audiences is really interesting, because I also agree that I think that this age that we're in now, where we can create amazing audio content for very, very niche audiences, is powerful. I can't quite understand where this audience is. I think what's interesting, Chris, from Chris Country's example, is you were serving an underserved audience, is my understanding, when you launched Chris Country. And therefore, there is an immediate space in the radio market for you to be in. I'm not too sure what space this will be in, if I'm being totally honest. And I think if it is trying to carve itself a space, it needs finance, it needs marketing, it needs investment. And I don't know much about the back end of it. I don't know where that's coming from, but I won't be tuning in, but I
it's not meant for you, of course.
And
it is meant for people of my age.
But would you listen to it?
No, absolutely not, because didn't I grow out of all that? In fact, didn't people of my age all grow out of that and seek something different? I rather think they did. Otherwise, Radio 2, which does have that audience, would still sound like Radio 1 did 30 years ago.
Yeah. Mm. Although I do think when times are tough in life generally...
And oh my God, philosophy.
This is great. You know,
politically and so on, it is an interesting time. I think there is a greater wish to hark back to the good old days. Mm. And I think things like the Dad's Army movie are an example of this. I think when everything's great, we're fine. But when people are unsure about where the economy is heading or where what's happening with jobs or cost of living, whatever else, I think there is a bit of a wish to go back and put on some roast.
Absolutely. So when we're feeling blue, let's think again about the 3-day week.
Well, Radio 1 about the 4-day week, aren't they? So, but actually, even on Radio 2 now, if you listen to Tony Blackburn, and that does hark back to a different era with some of the jingles he's got and some of the presentation. So I don't think it's all a bad thing. I just think expectations need to be managed. Plus, I don't think there's ever yet been a financially successful online radio station in the UK.
Well, good luck to Tony Prince anyway. Good guy, and he deserves to make it a success if anybody can. The 4-day week then, as just mentioned by Chris, what do we think of that in light of what happened with Chris Evans? Not allowed to, therefore there was a fall of soot. Grimmie, has he been allowed to take Fridays off or encouraged to take Fridays off? What do we think?
I think it's probably a management decision, and I think it's a bit of a stroke of genius. I think it's a great idea. The logic is that they want to make Radio 1, want to bring a younger audience to Radio 1. There are some interesting, younger, probably less expensive presenters working at the weekend. They can bring them into the Friday. It's going to save the station a few quid. It's going to introduce their audience.
How cynical.
Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's my licence fee payers' money that they're saving. That's a good thing. But they're going to hopefully introduce the majority of their audience that listen just during the week to the weekend schedule. That's the logic of it. I think it's a stroke of genius. I think Ben Cooper's done something quite sensible, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact it has.
It'll have some impact on Rajar, won't it? And back in my GLR days, we changed not the breakfast show, but everything else on a Friday. And it meant that you effectively had 80% of your audience during the week, according to Rajar. So they'll have to keep an eye on that. Mm.
But I can't see how it will change Rajar. I mean, I don't
it's
know.
It's because of the titles they put in the sheet that
you
take.
But I think, and I agree, I think it's a genius move. I think as radio people, we sit here and we go, weekday schedule, weekend schedule. You know, you're looking at Radio 1's 16 to 24-year-old audience. Are they working five-day weeks? Are they working 9 to 5 days? Do they have Saturdays, Sundays? You know,
It doesn't.
I think it matters. I mean, when I saw it, it made me feel uncomfortable. I was like, what? because I'm so used to having this mentality of working in commercial radio and kind of what we do and life that we have this Monday to Friday structure. I think it's great, and I'm really excited to hear it.
I think there's a parallel to here as well to something I learned from podcasts, which is that prior to thinking in depth about podcasts, every radio show in my mind was either half an hour long or an hour long or a multiple thereof.
Yeah.
And suddenly podcasts were coming out at 12 minutes and 23 minutes and just what the right length for that piece of audio was. And it was a bit of a wake-up moment for me. I was like, of course. So actually now, if I have a special show on Chris Country that's 44 minutes long, I'll run it as 44 minutes and I'll backfill with music or whatever at the end rather than trying to either stretch it out or push it in. And for Radio 1, if the 5-day week isn't something that's applicable to their audience, they should do something else, and good on them for giving it a spin.
It's the Radio Today Roundtable. We're in Salford. After this small commercial message, we'll find out what our panel have been listening to.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
Phil Maguire is here from the PRA, and he's going to recommend something. Whenever you're on here, you always come up with something that's pretty good. So well, that's the challenge.
Normally what I come up with is American narrative journalism, which is the majority of what I listen to. Today, Trevor, I'm going to bring you two British podcasts. Mm. And I've not run this past you in advance, so apologies. A bit of shameless self-promotion. My organisation, PRA Productions, the Prison Radio Association, has just released a new podcast called Sex Talk. We've dropped the first four episodes, and it's a podcast featuring conversations about sex. It's presented by Adele Roberts. You'll probably know her better from her job at Radio 1. And by Hilary Iniemo-Marcus, who you might know from Radio 4, or if you've spent time inside, you'll know him from National Prison Radio. And the first episode is about sex and health. One of the presenters has an HIV test on air. The second episode is sex and dating. We have an interview with the director of Grindr. Third episode, sex addiction. We visit a sex addiction clinic. And in the fourth episode, we talk about sex and prisons, candid stories from sex inside. So that's my first recommendation.
And how did you get funding for this?
We have been funded by Public Health England and Comic Relief, and we are being supported by a number of other organisations.
And here's a clip.
Erica is a writer whose memoir, Getting Off, was published in January.
Erica doesn't hold back in this book, which is an open, honest encounter of her struggles with sex addiction. This is an extract from the opening paragraph of the book. Revolting. I've been using this word and many adjectives like it to describe the things that have brought me to orgasm for more than two decades. I'm not just talking porn scenes either. I'm also referring to those scenes from my own life, co-starring semi-conscious men in dark bedrooms and sex workers in cheaply rented rooms, where I prioritise the satisfaction of sexual release over everything else screaming inside of me, please stop.
I'm sure Phil's got another one, but let's go to Stu.
I've also got two.
Okay, here's your first one.
I say I've got two. I've got one that is very close to us because we've produced it here. The other one was just a really good comment on how good I think Fern Cotton has sounded on the Radio 2 Breakfast Show. I think it's always hard to step into Chris Evans's shoes, but I think she sounded warm, I think she sounded fresh, she sounded lively, and I've really enjoyed having her on the radio in the morning over the last few days.
Here she is.
And your character Shuri in Black Panther must be such a brilliant character to play. I loved that movie so much. Mainly because I loved the music, I loved all the colours and the vibrancy of it, but the female roles are so strong in this film. Yeah. And you got to play an amazing character.
That, again, dream come true. I was just trying to tell the truth, you know. I was just trying to represent that girl, you know, that, you know, a lot of voices in the world, you don't really see women, you know, geeking out about technology and science and maths and, you know, engineering and all of that, all those cool things. So to be able to play this character and then she's so cool and then still be able to pick on her brother, it's so relatable.
That's a nice dynamic.
Yeah, she's a human. She's a well-rounded, full character, and I love that. And props to Joe and Ryan for writing her like that. I'm so grateful. I just went on set, told the truth, and everybody loved her, so I'm really grateful for that.
Oh, she's such a standout character in that movie, of course. Are you any good at a sort of a technical gadgetry wizard in real life?
Nope.
Let's go straight on, Stu, to your other one that you wanted to talk about.
Well, this is quite a selfish one. We've launched a podcast called Help, I Sexted My Boss, which we're very proud of because it's a production that we've kind of put together with Jordan North, who is from Radio 1, and an etiquette expert called William Hansen. It's funny. It's a kind of a modern take on etiquette and how to deal with certain situations. But aside from the shameless self-promotion, I think it's a good example for me of what happens when you get two people in a room who just enjoy spending time with each other and having a laugh. There's not really much of a format around it. There aren't many bells and whistles. It's just two guys coming together, having a laugh and being quite silly. And we're really proud of how it sounds.
When you work on the radio, you can tend to get a bit of stick and people will tweet you to
tell you.
You
want to try writing for the Mail Online?
Touché.
Shall I actually read you some of the abuse I got on Twitter once?
Yeah, do it.
I do actually have an album of screenshots on my phone.
Oh, fantastic, do it.
I think I do.
Someone once said to me, if you can get a job on the radio, then there's hope for us all. One really upset me, because I struggle with this and I'm dead paranoid about it on air. Someone said, how can someone who can't even pronounce his threes and frees get a job at the BBC? I can now, threes
but
and threes.
You've had work on your diction, though, haven't you?
I had, yeah. I have worked on my diction, that's right. Yeah, was it you that texted in that threes and threes?
It wasn't, Your Honour.
Was it? But it was you, weren't it? Anyway, go on, read us some of your
threes. So someone tweeted, I was on BBC Breakfast, and this was a few years ago, And someone said, breaking news, Camp Twat in a tie and cardigan combo thinks thank you letters are better than email. This is a game changer.
Interesting how many podcasts, like Fortunately and Two Non-Blondes and others, are two people just chatting, which is sort of breaks the rules of a lot of radio, doesn't it? As radio producers, we've all sat with presenters and said, it's a bit in.
Yeah. I mean, this podcast is so in, it's ridiculous. But it kind of works because you're getting into the minds of, in this particular podcast, and in the examples that you've mentioned there, they're friends, they know each other, they have a laugh before the mic goes on, and they have a laugh when the mic is on. And you know what? Sometimes you feel left out of the joke, but actually that's part of the... that you'd feel that in normal life if you were listening in on two people having a conversation. So
you want to be their friend, don't you?
You want to be their friend. And it's interesting, as of, you know, when this goes live, there'll be five episodes out there. But what we're already getting people kind of saying to us, talking to us about what those in-jokes are and about what that thing is that they talk about and asking for recipes for gin and Dubonnet.
And can I ask you as well, because I do think it's relevant to this whole market, did you get funding?
We didn't. We didn't.
So you're just doing this and putting it out there and seeing if it sticks.
Yeah, I'm friends with Jordan and William, and we got to, you know, we were in the pub and we went, let's do a podcast. So this, for Audio Always and for all of us, isn't something that we're doing because we want to start making lots of money out of it. We're doing it because we think it sounds really good and we're enjoying it. I think, you know, it's been an interesting example for us in terms of formatting and podcasts and how it all comes together. But the focus for us isn't about let's make money out of a podcast. The focus for this particular podcast for us is, well, let's just have some fun.
Chris.
I learned how to toast the Queen from listening to that podcast.
I mean, I've learned so much. Yeah, you don't also knock your glasses together when you cheers, which is something that I've stopped doing after that podcast.
You don't say to the Queen, you say the Queen.
The Queen.
And
indeed you do.
Being a northerner, I didn't know that.
So what have you been listening to?
I spent the last 2 weeks driving across very barren parts of the USA, which has given me an immense amount of listening time, and I've found it fascinating. So I want to share one podcast and one part of actual radio. I'm a big fan of local radio, and I fully accept why it's important we have national networks and brands, and I understand there's a place for it all in the market. So this isn't an anti-network rant by any means, but I think local radio still has a very important place, and I think the more unique a place you go to, the more important local radio is. And I think if you look at the map in the UK of where there are still local stations, they are communities that need to be served in some way. And I was driving through New Mexico and Oklahoma, where you can see nothing but enormous fields, one set of power cables on one side of the road and a train track on the other, a single line train track.
And the occasional oil derrick.
The occasional oil derrick and a train that would be 200 freight carriages long and you would see nothing else. So I was tuning up and down the dial and there was very little on there. So much so that I strayed onto AM, for those that remember that, and I found Ag Radio. And Ag Radio is a format that is local news, local sports, and an awful lot of ag, which is agricultural news. So weather in great detail, prices of farming supplies, when certain pieces of machinery can be fixed, what's happening with the prices of stuff at the abattoir or at the market. And it was a real radio station providing a real service to a community. And being AM in the States, the signal would go for, you know, miles upon end. And I didn't understand half the stuff they were talking about at all. But I could hear the importance of that service.
Have we got a clip?
Of course.
This is the American Ag Network. I'm Steve Halverson with a check of our agricultural markets on this Monday trading session. The ag weather forecast calls for extensive disruptions to spring field work in the Midwest following a stormy weekend. The northern plains had heavy snow with blizzard conditions over the past weekend, creating very stressful conditions for livestock, along with travel trouble, too. In the wheats, we are being led south by Kansas City. The southern plains has a round of beneficial rainfall in the forecast for later on this week. In the meantime, high winds and low relative humidity maintaining high stress levels on the crop. Kansas City wheat July down 14 cents at 5.01. Chicago wheat July down 7.5 at 4.81 and three quarters. Minneapolis wheat July down 9.67.
Christine, another one.
Yes, it's a podcast, and it's a podcast from public radio in the States. And it is the only podcast, barring The Archers, that I do listen to every single day. There are plenty of weekly ones or ones that I'll dip in and out of. But the podcast I listen to pretty much every day is called...
The Daily.
Marketplace.
Oh! New York Daily I was going to go for. No.
And I love Marketplace. I discovered this when I lived in the States. It's an APM radio show that's on a lot of the NPR stations. And it's billed as business news for the rest of us. So it's really accessible... but interesting stuff. And they've got interesting strands that will appear from time to time, such as, I've always wondered. Like, they always talk about the 10-year T-note when they do the Dow and all this, and I never knew what the 10-year T-note was until they explained it, or the relevance of it. Stories from the corner office where they catch up with CEOs, and really interesting stuff. But the presentation style I find extremely accessible. On my drive, I managed to hear it on many different time zones, so I heard it quite a few times over. And it is the show that when I moved back here, I continued to listen to and still do pretty much every day. And Kai Risdal, the presenter, is superb.
Here's Marketplace.
You lost in the back and forth of tariffs and trade and what is going on in this economy? That's all right. We got you. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Risdal. It is Friday, the 13th of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Yes, there is a whole lot of other shiny objects out there today, news-wise. We are going to keep our eye on the ball, though. 5 days in this economy, 5 minutes of live radio to wrap it all up in. Lee Gallagher is at Fortune Magazine. Dionne Rabowan is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, everybody.
Hi, okay. Kai.
So, Lee, let me start with you, and I think this is roughly chronological order the way it went this week, although I don't honestly remember.
It's hard to remember these days.
Right. What day is today? The Federal Reserve's minutes of its last meeting about 3.5 weeks ago came out this week, Fed Chair Powell's first meeting. I thought there were a couple of things of interest that I want to pick up on. The first one was Fed says the economy is going to grow at 3.3% in the short term, which is really quite nice, but then slow to 1.9%, which is... not so nice.
Yeah, that's a problem because, you know, we've been enjoying this pretty robust growth rate, and that is very robust, that 3.3%, and that's a big, big difference. And so that is alarming, although one thing that is interesting, they weren't at all worried about the volatility in the stock market that has had everyone so concerned in the near term. But that raises a lot of alarms, and there were a couple of other things in the
And I must say also, with my many hours of driving across the barren lands of New Mexico, I was listening to Help, I Sexed My Boss, and I felt that I was probably as far away from toasting the Queen as is possible. But I did love the juxtaposition, and I think that's what's great about podcasts, is you can listen to something in the most unexpected places and still have a connection with the crazy art of communication that we love so much.
One more to go, and it's another one of yours, Phil.
It is, and it's a British-made podcast. And I am a big fan of American narrative journalism, audio storytelling, and I've been waiting and waiting for the UK to catch up. And I think this is a really interesting time for podcasting all over the world, but particularly now in the UK. The British Podcast Awards are in their second year. The BBC has finally appointed a head of podcasts, Jason Phipps, who's the head of audio at The Guardian. That appointment has just been announced. The podcast that I've been waiting for to sort of fit that mould on the UK side is The Butterfly Effect by John Ronson. It's a phenomenal podcast. John Ronson traces a butterfly effect, and it's when a teen in Brussels had the idea to make porn free and easy to stream online. And what he does is he traces the unexpected consequences that develop from there. It's a podcast about porn, but like all good narrative journalism, it's the stories that make it great. It's actually about business. It's about human beings. It's about loneliness and greed and desire and friendship.
And it is actually very compelling, isn't it?
I
think it's storytelling of the highest order.
Utterly compelling. And it's the amount of work that goes into it. That's what makes the podcast that I listen to from the States stand out, is the amount of effort and time and journalism that goes into them. And that's what John Ronson's been able to give to the butterfly effect.
I'm like literally making love to the mic now. So there you go. It's going to be a love-making session.
This is Amika Bronson. He's an internet marketer. These days he works at Bitcoin, but in 2014 he got a job in affiliate marketing at a Toronto business called Avid Life Media. Affiliate marketing, that's all about getting your company into partnership with other companies.
That's correct. So other high traffic sites where there was a lot of males visiting.
Avid Life Media was very popular with men, and so Amika was always trying to partner with sites that attracted a lot of men.
It's all about trying to get our offers in front of those eyeballs, so to speak. So if someone came through that portal, clicked onto the site and did register for a membership, then we would engage in a rev share with that portal.
What you got for your membership with Avid Life Media was the chance to have an affair. This was the company that owned Ashley Madison.
Well, I think that just about wraps it up. Has anybody got any other business that they'd like to bring to the table? May I plug the Salford Nations and Regions Conference, which happens next week, or indeed this week, if you're listening to this next week. See what I did there? So it's Thursday the 19th anyway, and we'll be doing a live Radio Today, not really a roundtable, session, but we'll have some speakers there. We're going to meet a woman I'm really looking forward to meeting called Sarah Challis, who runs BBC R&D's voice activation department, which is based up here in Salford. So, you know, she's going to be teaching us all about Alexa's next sequence of skills, which is going to be really interesting. So that was that. Thank you, Stuart, for hosting us.
You're always welcome.
It's lovely here. I like it very much.
The sun's shining as well, almost, which is a novelty.
So if you need to do any recording and you're in Salford, Stuart Morgan at Audio Always is your man. If you need jingles, Chris Stevens at Diva Web and Ignite is your man. And
if you end up inside, I'm your man.
Thanks very much for listening. Let's hand back to Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. Good to have you back on after your Easter break. And as Trevor mentioned, he'll be here again next week with a discussion recorded live on stage at the Nations and Regions Conference. He's also going to be talking to the new chair of the Radio Academy, Yvonne Thompson, on next week's Radio Today programme. So join us for that. David Lloyd's Radio Moments are coming up after more thoughts on polishing live radio. Here's Mr. Cridland.
At james.crid.land, on the Radio Today podcast, and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, is it worth polishing and editing radio? Now, a few weeks ago, I wrote a piece called Live Radio is Lazy Radio, and in it, I made the point that if we pre-record audio, we can edit it, polish it, and make it sound great. And I propose that when we don't bother editing or polishing and just produce mediocre live radio, then that's lazy. This, of course, goes against the common wisdom that great radio is live and local, and it needn't be. I've argued in the past that instead of the two L's, live and local, we should be focusing on the two R's, real and relevant. Naturally, though, the comments both on the piece itself and on social media where it was shared were quite hot. People argued that radio should be live because it's more exciting for the presenters, or that radio should be live because the audience like hearing mistakes. And I find both of those arguments are either a little self-serving or a bit self-indulgent. However, some commenters had actually read the article rather than the headline, and I was pointed towards a great video from Tim Lee, an Australian radio presenter, on how he uses automation to make tighter and better segues. So instead of lazily waiting for one song to fade and then starting another, perhaps mashing a sweeper over the top, Tim spends time in his automation software to edit and polish so it sounds better. Have a listen.
Old school. It's 92.9.
So there's how the song actually is, and then there's how I want it to sound in the car when someone's listening. I want it to sound like a mix show, like the main vocal comes straight in. Place the sweep to where you want it to actually play out on air. That is the downbeat where we're going to bring the actual song back in. Save as your multi-track to a quick record. Now we're just looking for the last beat of the song that we can bring the Backstreet's Back, all right, vocal in on. Now to find that downbeat so we can bring the Oh My God, We're Back Again in at the right time. All right, we've slaved away. Now let's listen to see how it's going to play out.
Backstreet's Back, all right. Okay.
school. It's 92.9. Oh my God, we're back
again. So spending time to edit segues properly makes a pretty good difference, it turns out. It's hard to argue that live segues are ever going to be better than properly edited, polished ones. There's certainly less work. Tommy Faraz pointed me to an article he'd written in 2015, and in it he argues why radio needs to break linearity. It's a wonderfully precise phrase that does a much better job of saying what I mean. He says,
radio should be turning the fact that content doesn't need to be subordinated to live broadcasts anymore into a great opportunity to produce premium content for a more engaging radio. The sound production can be better finished, the editing can be clean and precise, the pace can be better adjusted, the guests better prepped, the hosts more effectively coached, the entire show could be even tested. Why are radio professionals still creating great content primarily for live radio?
And I enjoyed Tommy's piece. It's also certainly true that pre-producing audio in chunks has benefits for multi-platform use too, both in terms of personalization and shareability. Meanwhile, Peter Saxon, the editor of radioinfo.com.au, says that an element of pre-production can be helpful with a useful kitchen analogy.
No chef starts cooking everything from scratch when the order comes into the kitchen. Every ingredient for each dish on the menu that can be prepared in advance is, so that it can be quickly blended with the rest of the meal, thrown in the pan, and then served fresh, live, and local.
Finally, I wasn't specifically talking about voice tracking, though some commenters assumed that I was. In particular, a number of people mailed to say that their contracts force them to do some voice tracked shows on out-of-area stations for no additional money. And that's cynical from radio station management and communicates that voice tracked shows are worthless. No wonder then that many voice tracked shows sound like lazy nonsense. And of course, I'm not arguing for those. Live radio is still great, but pre-producing radio, segues, individual components, or even whole shows isn't cheating. Our audiences have access to so many great and beautifully produced pieces of audio. Polishing and editing our audio can do no harm. Or we could just be lazy and not bother. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Radio Moments,
David Lloyd. BBC Radio's Sig Tunes and iDents wouldn't have been quite the same for many years without the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, which opened its doors this week 60 years ago. It was originally created with a budget of £2,000 to produce incidental sounds and weird music for radio, and was based in the BBC's Maidervale studios. With the absence of digital technology, the gifted creative team relied on real sounds and tape loops.
Radiophonic Workshop was always staffed really by enthusiasts, people who wanted to be here. They were studio managers at the BBC who didn't just want to be editing tape and fading up ready-made programmes. They wanted to be in there with the nitty-gritty, making programmes themselves. But they also wanted to be working at the cutting edge of radio production, making new kinds of sounds, the kinds of sounds that just couldn't be got out of the BBC sound effects library.
If you're using natural sounds, you could use anything. You can use a door banging, you can use glass breaking, you can use the wind that's blowing down the road. You can knock anything. That's not bad, not bad. And you record it and play with it and play it backwards, forwards, echo, double it up, speed it up, slow it down.
And then all we have to do is cut the notes the right length. We can join them together on a loop and listen to them. And then with the higher notes of the rhythm, again we join them together on a loop and play it in synchronization with the first take.
The huge inventive talent at the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, known best on TV for the Doctor Who theme tune, but on radio heard everywhere on network and on the new BBC locals too. Early theme tune to the Radio 4 PM programme commemorating 60 years of the Radiophonic Workshop. It's 5 years this week since a controversial chart entry.
The Vodafone Big Top 40.
All right, the song at number 9 is a new entry for Judy Garland. To explain more, here's Dominic Byrne from the Big Top 40 news team.
Well, this has all happened following the death of Margaret Thatcher earlier this week, who was Prime Minister from 1979 to 1990.
Which means that we've got a brand new entry at number 2. To explain more, here's Newsbeat's music reporter, Sinead Garvan.
This is Newsbeat.
Tributes poured in across the world for Margaret Thatcher when she died on Monday, but there were also people throwing street parties around the UK. An online campaign began in 2007 to try to get this song, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, to number one in the charts the week Lady Thatcher died.
Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, not quite being played on the chart this week in 2013. And staying with charts, it's 13 years this week since the first singles chart combined physical release sales with legal downloads. Happy Silver Jubilee this week to CFM in Carlisle. Its launch covered on Border TV.
Good morning, this is John Byers. Welcome to your new local radio station playing the best mix of music.
After a dramatic entrance, CFM's managing director, John Myers, launched the station onto the region's airwaves. A champagne breakfast, balloons and a great party spirit with 300 guests set the scene. CFM's slogan is the best mix of music, and that's what it promises to provide to its listeners in Cumbria and southwest Scotland.
And how are you going to provide the best mix that John has always talked about? I mean, there can be a million ways of mixing music.
Well, as John has already mentioned, it's basically the best hits of the last 40 years. If listeners want to hear it, they'll get it. It's basically anything from the Beatles to Madonna.
It's the sort of coverage you get, isn't it, when you happen to be owned by a TV station? CFM in Carlisle, launching 25 years ago. Ed Stewart died a couple of years ago, and it was this week 12 years ago that he hosted his last regular show on Radio 2. He'd been there off and on since 1968.
There's Dusty Springfield, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. That was one of the last records we played on the Big L, Radio London, nearly 39 years ago. Oh, even getting on for 40 if you want to look at it that way. Anyway, I've been surprised at the depth of feeling expressed by yourselves in my leaving. Well, it's touched me and it's astounded me, but not entirely surprised me, because there's such a love of the type of music I've been playing at your request over the years that I can imagine that you're disappointed and in many cases devastated at its demise. But being an optimistic sort of person myself, well, it's been a wonderful 39 years with its ups and downs here at the Beeb.
So much unsaid. The intonation said it all, didn't it? Ed Stewart's last regular Radio 2 programme this week in 2006. This week last year, Dorothy Torrey died. She was secretary to 6 directors general at the BBC, including the first, Lord Reith.
I stayed with him until 38, when he disastrously decided to leave. Terribly tiresome he was towards the end, because he was always coming out at the office bored. I've got nothing to do. I've done it all. I've done the BBC. I've got it where I want it. Of course, he had this terrible background, which I call terrible, being an atheist, of repression. His father was moderator of the Free Church of Scotland. And so he had this, what I call, repressive childhood. Well, this was the interesting thing. Soon after I joined, he went on a cruise with Montague Norman, the governor of the Bank of England, without Lady Reith, and when he came back, he was emancipated.
Honest recollections of Lord Reith from Dorothy Torrey, who died this week last year, aged 100. 1984 now, and something new for East Yorkshire and North Lincolnshire.
This is a test transmission by the Independent Broadcasting Authority in preparation for the start of independent local radio in Humberside. The VHF frequency is 102.7 MHz and the MF frequency is 1161 kHz, that's 258 metres in the medium wave band.
Viking News, this is David Golley. British Airways are calling for tighter safety measures at Humberside Airport. County Police Chief David Hall replies to criticism from a Labour MP, and villagers in Swinefleet rally round to save a little boy's life. The full details after the national summary.
The 7 o'clock news, this is Douglas Cameron.
There, it's Cool and the Gang and Celebration, and let me tell you, it's a real celebration here this morning. Good morning, this is David Fuster welcoming you to Viking Breakfast. It's my privilege and pleasure to be with you each morning between 7 and 10, and coming up in the next 30 minutes, we'll be looking at the latest travel and traffic news, playing our very first Viking competition, that's Treasure Trail. We'll also be keeping you in the know with all the local happenings, and of course playing some great music as well. 16 minutes past 7, and here's some of that good music with Boy George and Culture Club.
I wonder just how many presenters actually scripted their first ever link as stations are born. It's tempting, isn't it? The birth of Viking this week, 34 years ago. So, with Jamie Theakston taking over Heart Breakfast in London 13 years ago...
Maybe send her a couple of donkeys.
Chris Evans taking Radio 2 Drive Time from Johnny Walker 12 years ago...
Australian toads, good day or bad day.
Johnny Vaughan taking over Capital London Breakfast 14 years ago...
We had a text the other morning from a woman just saying, I just found a salmon on the path near Finchley.
Mike Reed, now on United DJs Radio, ending his stint on Radio 1 Breakfast 32 years ago...
I'll send you a mug only if you have it in the play.
And the launch of the first Help a London Child on Capital... 42 years ago, those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. Thank you, David. Also to James, Trevor, and guests Chris, Stewart, and Phil, and to Graham Bryce from Bauer. Contact us with any thoughts on what you've heard this week on Twitter. We're at Radio Today, and I'm at Stuart Clarkson. Next time, Trevor's at the Nations and Regions Conference and talking to the new chair of the Radio Academy. Plus, we'll have some guests on to talk about the week's big radio stories. And hopefully, fingers crossed, the return of the geek quiz, Stu versus Roy.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.